Occupy the empty holes until the man I am has faded. No more doors are barricaded. Come inside this heart.
You know, one of the things that you were just sharing with me, Gary, is as you have reached out to young people in the inner city, mm-hmm. that one of the things that has been clear to you before and since you've been working with them, particularly with the Drumline Ministry, is mm-hmm. that everyone needs to be loved.
Absolutely. You know, we are wired to be loved. And, you know, I think when you look at the prisons, you look at the dropouts, you look at some of the kids that have just, for whatever reason, you look at them and you cannot figure out how they ended up where they end up. If you track back their life, these kids were not loved. You know, they come from a broken family. You know, sometimes their parents might have been incarcerated, or their just family broke up and they were passed to an aunt. And you look at the situation, you think the only thing these kids were missing, it wasn't money, it wasn't a new pair of sneakers, it was just love. No one gave them love. I mean, we are wired to be loved and to give love back. And when you take a child who really suffers from love deprivation, and I don't know what else to call it, is just absolute love deprivation.
Yes,
we can't expect them to turn out much different than they often do. You know,
that is such an excellent point. And because you think about the times that a parent was willing to give money, but the child wanted the parent's love. And when they gave the money instead, the child just ended up frustrated and eventually angry. I've known cases where a parent sent money and, you know, the child is off in school, in college, mm-hmm. and the child wrote a letter to the parent, wanting the parent to write back. The child wanted part of the parent. And so rather than just call on the phone, rather than just send a quick letter, hey, can you send me? The child wrote a letter that had within it questions and comments that required feedback. It required responses to the questions and to some of the comments made. And instead of sending a heartfelt response to what was communicated in the letter sent by the child, the parent instead sent money. No letter, just a brief note. I thought this would help. Boom, money's in there. And the child angry because the child did not get what the child truly wanted.
These kids are going to get your attention one way or another. They're either going to get it from you positively, and if you don't give it to them, they're going to act out negatively because they know that will get your attention. And it's just it's a sad state of affairs. We are, you know, we have built a society today where we all are so busy.
Yes.
Our time is so occupied, and you know, we're doing things we feel we have to do. And I think that the biggest thing that has suffered in our society today is the breakdown of the family. And people say the breakdown of the family in the black neighborhoods. I see the breakdown of the family in every neighborhood. Every neighborhood.
Yes, that is so true. And that breakdown can occur in so many ways and for so many different reasons. And
yes.
I couldn't help but be captivated by the cause of that breakdown in the final service. If you would, give us just an overview of what the final service is about. By the way, ladies and gentlemen, one of the things that you'll hear Gary share with us is that, and this is one of the things, Gary, that fascinates me about this book, is that to an extent, this is fact. It's a true story. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, to an extent, it is fiction. If you could start there and then give us just an overview, and then we can start looking at some of the details of what unfolds in the final service.
Oh, I'd love to. Thank you. I call final service faction. You know, it is fiction based on fact. You know, what we've done is we've taken this true story and we've given it a different ending. What I mean by that is the Sandy, who is the woman that the story is built around, is a real person. She's a real school teacher. Now, of course, now she's retired, but in Illinois, and her relationship with her father, it is outlined in the book, is real. In fact, when you're reading the book, the first five chapters is history. It is exactly what and how things happened. Sandy was a school teacher. I used to speak to her class on National Library Week every year, and she was a person who became a good friend, and I got to know her and her husband a little bit. And one day, about the fifth year that I was teaching, it actually was 2012, I came in to speak to her class, and she was crying. She was talking to another teacher, was crying, and then left the room. And I spoke to the class. After I finished talking to her class, I caught her in the hallway, and I asked her what was wrong, and she was wiping the tears, and she said that her father was diagnosed with lung cancer yesterday. And my first thought was of her sadness, but then I saw the anger. She started telling me how angry she was at her father. That her father, they lived in this little town, and her father kind of suffered from a depression, and he drank too much, and he became an embarrassment to her and the community, and that he'd become a hoarder, and that he had bought a warehouse through many of his many business ventures that failed, bought a warehouse that was about 10,000 per foot, and filled it from floor to ceiling with garbage. And she was angry. She said that she's going to be the one that's going to have to take care of it. And we talked about the fact that she, you know, her nickname is Shadow. People called her Shadow. And she said that people called her Shadow because everywhere her father was, she was there until she was about, from the time she was born until she was 12 years old. But something happened when she turned 12. She said that her father became distant, went back to school to get an education because he dropped out of school to join the war effort in World War II, got his GED, got his bachelor's, went back and got his MBA, just totally ignored her. And it started creating this family tension. A few of his business ventures failed. He started drinking more heavily. And the family just really crumbled. And now he was dying. She had all this bitterness pent up. And she was more angry at him than she was sad that he was dying. Well, I encouraged her. I told her, Sandy, I said, you need to talk to your father. You need to go sit down with him, make amends. You know, things happen for a reason. We don't know what he was suffering from. We don't know why, you know, what turned him, you know. But I said, please don't let this end with you angry and him feeling this sense of failure with his family and his life. And she said she didn't think that she could. Well, a couple days later, I get an email from her, and the email basically said, my father died, and he didn't even have the common decency to wait and say goodbye. She was so angry. Well, I had a couple of conversations with her. I encouraged her to talk to other people. But then she started cleaning out this warehouse. And through the course of cleaning out the warehouse, she found things that her father saved that was surprising, almost shocking in a way. I mean, it painted the picture of a man who was mentally ill, and there was no rhyme or reason. We think what he saved. Where the fiction comes in is, and I should back up and tell you this, I used to teach a business leadership class at Eckerd College in Florida, and I would teach MBA students about building a business plan, and I rarely talked about numbers and details. What I would tell them is I want them to write a happy ending to their business.
Interesting, okay.
And I say, write a story about, you know, why you start the business, the positive reasons, how it's going to positively impact your employees and their families, how it's going to positively impact the community, and how at the end it's going to have a happy ending for you and your family. And students would always resist doing that, but at the end, they were delighted they did, because what it did, it took an inanimate object, you know, like a business plan, and it gave it life. Gotcha. And it gave them a new enthusiasm and a new heart for running that business. Well, what I talked to Sandy about is I said, you need to write a happy ending to your father's life and his life with you. And she says, he's dead. I can't. It's too late. I said, no, it's not too late. And so I sat down and I started sketching out a story that I called The Final Service. And then there are three what I call final services in the book that you'll encounter. And it was a happy ending to Sandy's relationship with her father. And after the book was finished, I gave her the manuscript, And I told her, I said, I won't publish this. You know, this is, unless I have your approval, it doesn't. And she called me crying a few weeks later, and she said, you are my Sam. I appreciate it. Please publish the book. And Sam is the character, the fictional character that comes to visit Sandy and helps kind of talk her through her problems, her life, and the issues she's facing.
And I tell you what, this fictitious character, Sam, plays such a powerful role as he helps her work through a major issue, some major issues in her life. I appreciate you so much for setting that up for us. Ladies and gentlemen, this story, and remember, I like what Gary calls this, faction, because it is fiction, but it is based on fact. It is based on a true story. There is a lot more wealth, a lot more golden nuggets that you'll be able to grasp today as you listen in on the conversation that I'll continue with Gary Moore when we come right back. Souvenirs from floor to ceiling, gathered on my search for meaning.